Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. School is supposed to be a place where children go to learn, where they're safe. Once again, and this time in Red Lake, Minnesota, student carries guns into his school and starts shooting.
There's been a terrible tragedy. There was a shooting at the school. We have 6 confirmed dead at this time. We believe that one of those students is the shooter. The school has been evacuated.
Down the hall, he saw a teacher and some students. Understandably, they fled and ran into a classroom. It is there that he opened fire, killing a number of students and the teacher.
We had a couple of head injuries, close range. The shooter was intent on something, you know.
What does that tell you, those kinds of injuries?
What does that tell me? I think there was an intent to kill.
He continued to roam through the school, firing randomly. Shortly after that, the assailant went back into the classroom where he had previously fired upon those people, and he took his own life.
This crime could just as easily have occurred in a non-Indian community as an Indian community. There is nothing in this crime to tell me this is a Red Lake problem. This is a United States, an American problem.
The killing at Red Lake comes at a time when people across the U.S. are watching a frightening number of similar cases. A church meeting in Brookfield, Wisconsin, 7 dead. A courthouse in Atlanta, 4 killed. The streets of Philadelphia, 23 deaths in the last week and a half. And the most common weapon? The handgun. All this at a time when half the states in the union are in the process of revising or reviewing their gun control laws. And here's the twist. In some states, politicians want to crack down on the possession and registration of handguns and assault weapons. In other states, they're going in the opposite direction, making it easier for people to buy and to conceal and to carry a gun. So what do you think the answer is? Can anything be done to prevent the kind of killing that we saw this week in Red Lake? Would fewer guns or more guns make any difference? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to start the program today with Ruben Rosario. He is a reporter and a columnist with the Pioneer Press. This morning he's in Bemidji, Minnesota. That's about 30 miles away from Red Lake. Ruben, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Dick.
You were in Red Lake yesterday. Tell me what you saw.
Well, what I saw was a Red Lake nation, in still reeling from a sense of shock, numbness, a state of mourning. Casinos closed down, casinos that never closed down, flags at half-mast, people speaking in somber tones. This was an incident, a massacre, inside a school that not only affected the Red Lake Nation, Dick, but it affects everyone, anyone who has a child that goes to school. And so the Red Lake Nation, like the rest of the state of Minnesota and perhaps the country, is still scratching their heads 3 days later, trying to find out the questions of why. And it's still something that the FBI is still trying to determine, collecting facts, trying to complete an investigation, even though they've pretty much all but assumed that he was the lone gunman and that he shot himself after this massacre. There are 10 dead, including the gunman, 7 injured, 5 remain in hospitals. One young man who actually was shot at close range is undergoing surgery today to remove a bullet slug from his chest that actually ricocheted from his chin. Who had seen the gunman come back and kill his teacher in front of him. So it's been a week of a couple of days of horror, but also a sense of optimism in terms of healing ceremonies that have been taking place the past 3 days, and the unity of people and support that have been expressed through phone calls and emails to the tribal leadership.
And Ruben, I guess by now everybody knows the names of the children who were killed and the children who were injured. All of them, it seems, 15 years old. These are just kids.
These are kids. These are 14, 15-year-olds. I got a teenager at home, and, you know, it's when this thing happens, you scratch your head. Historically, schools are the safest place for a child to be in. Actually, homes and the streets of America are less safe on a normal day. But when these things happen, it's an assault on that sanctuary that we hold so dear when we send our kids to school.
Ruben, one of the people that you quoted in the piece that you wrote in this morning's newspaper said that he was hoping this event did not give Red Lake a name as a town where this murder happened. Is he thinking of the way that we refer to Columbine and those kinds of references we have?
Yes, I believe what he was trying to say is, yes, this thing happened in Red Lake, and the community is in you know, it's tremendously affected by this, but they're not living in a vacuum. This has happened in various other communities, Jonesboro, Paducah, you know, Columbine. It's happened in other places, and there's a sense of a little bit of anger that the Red Lake Indian Reservation community is linked intrinsically to this shooting as the defining event for that community, and they're a little bit upset about that.
Are people saying that anything might have been done that could have or would have prevented
yes.
this?
As you all know, Dick, there's a lot of great, in hindsight, everything looks great. And this young man, his father committed suicide several years ago. His mother was severely injured in a car accident and was being cared for in a nursing home. He also, the understanding for people we spoke with, has some diagnosed mental health issues for which he was reportedly receiving medication for. He was on had expressed desires to shoot up the school about a year ago, and had also been on a Nazi type website, spouting Nazi type of messages, listening to heavy metal music, wearing goth like clothing, also reportedly being taunted or you know, ostracized by kids at the school, which is an eerie almost reflection of most of the shootings that have taken place. They've mostly been committed by people who have been described as loners, young men, troubled loners, and again, all of them the common access to firearms.
Anybody talking about the question of access to guns, or is it basically just the troubled past of this young man?
I think it's more the troubled past. It's a combination of the fact that the child, of course, the grandfather was a Red Lake police officer who, of course, had access to guns. He was licensed to carry them, of course. And this young man, after killing his grandfather, took the grandfather's 12-gauge shotgun, 40 caliber handgun, and a 22 caliber, which the FBI still doesn't know whether the child came with that or took it from the home, put on his grandfather's bulletproof vest, drove in his grandfather's squad car to the school where the massacre took place. You know, it's you scratch your head and you go, what is... true is that, you know, if he had grabbed a pea shooter and gone to school, I don't think there would be 10 dead now. The question is that once you have access to guns, it just raises the lethality.
Okay, that's the point at which I think we are going to say goodbye to you, Ruben, and move on with some of our other guests. I do want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
Ruben Rosario is a columnist and reporter with the Pioneer Press, talking to us this morning from Bemidji, Minnesota, not far from Red Lake. We are talking this hour about the range of gun-related killings that we have seen over the last month. Most recently, in Brookfield, Wisconsin, a man killed 7 people and injured 4 at a meeting of the Church of the Living God. And we're going to invite Scott Gunderson to join us now. He is a state rep from Wisconsin and one of the politicians who is pushing for a conceal and carry law for that state. This is a law that would, in fact, make it easier for people to carry a handgun with them. Scott, it's good of you to join us.
Good morning, Dick.
I'm wondering, as you're listening to what's happened in Red Lake, Minnesota, if you have any thoughts about the relevance of a conceal and carry law and what we saw in the news there.
Well, I think it's very clear when we look at, you know, all these facts across the country that a concealed carry law does not increase crime. We have 46 states in this union that have concealed carry laws right now. 34 of those are shall issue. And we don't see an increase in any of those states with concealed carry laws. So, you know, it's very possible, and we have found in other states, that when you have people carrying concealed weapons, those people who want to commit crimes think twice about what they're doing. But, you know, you're really talking about a different situation here in this shooting in Red Lake. You're talking about really a disturbed and troubled a child who, you know, for whatever reason, you know, really lost his mind that day. And
well, what about
so
the story
we're really
from Brookfield,
talking about two
is,
different things.
Okay, the Brookfield story, one that's closer to home for you. Would it have mm-hmm. made a difference in that case if there was in place mm-hmm. in Wisconsin a law that allowed people to carry a handgun with them?
Well, I think it would if we allowed in the bill that is in front of us in Wisconsin, if that allowed for people to carry in certain places, but we do have exemptions, and there is places you cannot carry, being churches and schools and certain businesses. And you know, I think that it's that it does make sense that if people are law-abiding citizens, they have gone through training, they go through an FBI background check, that these are our best citizens, and these are not people we should be afraid of, and actually that they could help people in certain cases.
Even if it means that the sort of end sum of it all is that there are more guns out there rather than fewer guns.
Well, there's never been any study to prove that more guns causes more crime. Actually, the opposite, that more guns actually cause less crime. And, you know, we really got to sit back and take a look here. The guns are not the problem. It's the person behind the gun. It's the person who actually pulls the trigger who commits a crime. And it's not the weapon itself.
And events like the one that we're talking about this hour in Red Lake, Minnesota, give us exactly that opportunity that Scott's talking about, to sit back, take a look at the problem. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. When we come back after the break, we'll be talking with Rebecca Thoman. She is Executive Director of Citizens for a Safer Minnesota. We'd also like to hear from you. Do you think that the issue of the number of guns on the street, the ease of getting them, is a part of coming to terms with the kind of killing that we have been seeing, not just yesterday or not just this week, I should say, in Red Lake, Minnesota, but in a number of instances that we've been watching over the past month? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. The FBI is still investigating the details of what happened in Red Lake, Minnesota. It is known that one young man burst into the school, and as a result of his actions, 10 people were killed. That's including himself, and a number remain in the hospital. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. It is a chance for us to take a look at the fact that right across this country, state legislatures are all looking at their gun control laws. And in some cases, they're looking at toughening them up. In some cases, they're looking at making it easier for citizens to carry weapons. We're interested in hearing from you whether or not this is particularly relevant to this situation and whether or not the nation needs to take a strong second look at what's happening with guns. A reminder, 1-800-423-TALK. We have with us Scott Gunderson, Wisconsin State Representative. He is the author of the concealed carry law, one of the authors of the concealed carry law in his state. Rebecca Thoman is joining us now. She's Executive Director of Citizens for a Safer Minnesota, joining us from a studio in Minneapolis. Rebecca, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
Your thoughts about the tragedy in Red Lake?
Well, I think it's an important time for us to ask ourselves yet again what we're going to learn from this latest incident. And it's clear that we need to re-examine our attitudes about how we prevent gun violence, because our current approach, it's not working. Typically, what we do in this country is use a criminal justice model where we wait for something bad to happen with a gun, and then we punish someone after the fact. And our organization and several others around the country are now trying to refocus our approach so that we can take more of a public health approach. Let's look at what are the causes, what are the underlying factors that contribute to gun violence, and let's try to prevent that before it happens. Let's not wait and then react to something bad.
Are you saying that that really doesn't matter what the laws in any given state are, that people like the young man in Red Lake are going to get their hands on a weapon anyway, so let's not waste all our energy on gun control?
Oh, not at all. In fact, the policies that we adopt in how we manage guns in our country should be informed by good public health research, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, what we live under in this country is a very sophisticated marketing strategy that's been sent to us by the gun industry. I mean, that what they really would like us to believe is that criminals are out there. They're going to get guns no matter what we do, and we can't stop them. So all we have left to do is arm ourselves. You know, that's a pretty good marketing strategy. That will sell guns. And that's really what we're up against, because that sort of marketing strategy, those messages have been being sold to us for decades and decades, and we believe them. And that's one of the most difficult things about reexamining our attitude, is we need to start looking at this a different way. We need to start looking at What can we do to intervene? And there are many, many policies that we could implement that would be helpful, but they come from a basic attitude that we have.
Scott Gunderson, what Rebecca is saying here is that the idea of the law that you're helping draft is more part of a marketing strategy related to the gun industry. What do you think?
Well, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, this isn't about selling guns. I mean, I don't think there's any state implemented a law because they wanted to have retailers and gun manufacturers sell more firearms. I just don't believe that. I guess I'm really having a hard time with that because this is really about the Second Amendment. This is about a right that was given to all of us as citizens of the United States to be able to bear arms and be able to defend ourselves when necessary. And that's why you have states in this country that have concealed carry laws. You know, there's never been a state in this country that's ever repealed a concealed carry law. Never. And the reason is because there really are no problems with the law-abiding citizens who are carrying concealed weapons.
I want to touch down just in one other part of the country here while we're taking a look at what's happening, because people in Philadelphia are asking many of these same questions. The city has seen some 23 deaths in the past 10 days. Weekend before last, 10 murders, 8 of them involving a handgun, one homicide lieutenant was quoted as saying, "No shock or outrage anymore." He's seen so many handgun-related killings, that kind of shock and outrage is worn off. John Myers is joining us on the line. He's a state rep from Pennsylvania. John, it's good of you to join us.
Thank you.
You want to see these laws change so it is harder to get a gun in Philadelphia. What is it that you're actually proposing?
Well, what I'm proposing is, well, first of all, let me say this here. I resonate with the proposition that limiting the availability of guns, in my opinion, is one way to cut down on the violence. Because if you don't have a gun, then you can't shoot nobody. The legislation that we're looking at here in Pennsylvania is to limit gun purchases to one gun a month.
Wait a second. John, one gun a month doesn't sound to me like a significant limiting in access to guns.
Well, let me just say this here. Right now, you can buy 30, 40, or 50 in one day. And, of course, you know, as you understand politics, you got to find some ground where you can get the level of support that you need in order for there to be some public policy change.
So you're saying the limit of one gun a month is at least a step in the direction that you want to go?
Right direction. Let me give you an example. There's a case here in Pennsylvania where three people came together and set up a scheme to buy handguns.
Yeah.
Two of them were ex-offenders, so therefore they couldn't buy the gun. So they went and found a female who didn't have a police record. And they bought three guns, three automatic weapons. They paid her $65 for each gun and $25 worth of crack for each gun.
John, there's one other thing that you're trying to do, and I just want you to give us a quick image of that, because we know that in Pennsylvania there are a lot of people who are strongly in support of the right to bear arms. You're in Philadelphia. Are you trying to make a case that things are different in the city than they might be out in the countryside?
Well, yes, that's part of it. And the other part of it is that I believe that local governments ought to have the right to decide on public policy as it relates to the local government. Here in Pennsylvania, the only place that you can get public policy decisions made are in the state legislature. 10 years ago, it was left to local governments, and both Philadelphia and Pittsburgh set up laws to regulate assault weapons. As a result of that, the state legislature took the power from the local governments and kind of just shut them down with regards to them being able to regulate how guns are accessed and sold in their own municipalities.
All right, Connection listeners, just a reminder for you. We have now with us on the program two state representatives, John Myers from Pennsylvania, saying that it's time to limit access to guns. Scott Gunderson from Wisconsin, who's looking at getting a conceal and carry law passed in that state, which would allow people to carry weapons. And Rebecca Thoman, who is executive director of Citizens for a Safer Minnesota. And we're asking you questions about what should be done to either limit or allow the use of guns in society. 1-800-423-8255. Hillsborough, North Carolina, and Ed's on the line. Ed, thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you. I'd like to make a couple of points. Number one, I'm 56 years old, and when I was growing up, everybody, most of the men and boys at that time all grew up hunting and with guns, and we were not shooting each other with guns at that time. A lot of the problem now, I think, is just with society, with a failure with kids. You can go buy a gun anywhere. New gun legislation and all the things that they're talking about, I think, is useless because there are just too many guns that are out there that have been there too long that are easily gotten by anybody.
Ed, are you agreeing with Rebecca here that we have a wrong-headed attitude about guns in society today?
Yes.
Or is it simply a safety issue that we're not teaching people how to handle them?
No, I think we just have the wrong attitude. We're blaming everything on guns, and that's not the problem. If you take the combination of children seeing, you know, violent things on television, the violent video games, all of these things, and then, guns are so easily gotten by anybody, old guns that have been out there. There are just millions and millions of guns in this country that have been out there forever. The new gun legislation only affects honest gun owners. It's not affecting the people, the majority of the people that are that are causing the crimes. You know, I believe that most of it is just a failure with our children. We don't spend enough time with them anymore. They see too much violence. You know, it's not much difference than somebody having PTSD. You get exposed to enough violence. You know, and things happen.
Rebecca, is this the attitude issue that you're talking about?
No, not exactly. The attitude that I think is a problem is the attitude that the gun lobby promotes, that guns actually make us safer. It goes against everything we know about what's in the public health and medical research, which shows that where there are more guns, there is more gun death and injury. And in fact, it's the whole concealed and carry bill notion revolves around the idea that we need to have a gun on our hip at the ready because there are so many criminals out there lurking in our libraries and at our state fair. And that is the exact attitude that causes us to have ready access to guns, and that is the nature of the problem. Guns in the home, most children who use a gun to kill themselves or others are getting these guns from their very own homes or the home of another family member or a close friend. Mm-hmm. So we are the enemy when it comes to our children's access to firearms, and it's really based on an unrealistic fear and the myth that we need a gun to protect ourselves.
Scott, you say it's not a myth.
Well, no, it's not a myth. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, I was hit with a crowbar over the head going into my business one morning at 5 a.m. If we would have had a concealed carry law in Wisconsin, I think that guy would have thought twice about coming up behind me and hitting me over the head and trying to kill me. If we would have had a concealed carry law in Wisconsin and if I would have been carrying a concealed weapon.
But there was a story not long ago from Texas where a fellow went a little bit nuts on the lawn of a courthouse with an AK-47, and because that state has a concealed carry law, someone with a pistol decided that he would get involved and he got shot. I mean, I know that we could argue, you know, this story versus that story for the rest of the morning, but is there evidence to indicate that when the crooks know that anybody in the liquor store, anybody in the school or the daycare center or the bar might be carrying a pistol, that they won't commit a crime?
It's very clear, national records, these are FBI statistics, that when any state that when they passed a concealed carry law, violent crime went down on an average of 24%. Now, violent crime is going down across the country right now. We won't argue that point. But it's very clear when a state passes this law, violent crimes go down. And we can't argue that point. You know, the caller made some very good points. TV violence, video games that are just full of violence. I mean, we have to, as a society, start looking at exactly where we're going and what we're going to allow. As parents, parents have to start looking at exactly what their kids are doing, what's going on in their lives. You know, it's very clear that this 16-year-old in Red Lake was very troubled and disturbed. We're now hearing about neo-Nazi activity, yeah. Things that going on in his life, things that were actually a red light months ago.
Scott, let me stop you there because we've got a caller actually. I will get back to you, Rebecca. Can you just hang on to that? I want to make sure our callers get their chance here too. So to Arlington, Massachusetts, Christine is on the line. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Dick. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Great. I have an interesting point to make. I was walking to the art store over by Fenway Park yesterday, and I was crossing that bridge over the Mass Pike, and I saw this interesting billboard, and it read, "Massachusetts, you'll live longer here." So something to that effect. And I asked my husband, what's that all about? And he said, well, in Massachusetts, there's a waiting period for when you can get a gun. And so for some reason, he believes that that might relate to why there were fewer gun deaths in Massachusetts. But my one point is this. If that disturbed young man didn't have access to a gun 2 days ago, then all those people wouldn't have died. And that's the bottom line.
Rebecca, you wanted in here.
I wanted to respond to Representative Gunderson because actually the National Academy of Sciences just did a huge review of all the evidence and research that's out there, and what they found is that there's absolutely no evidence that conceal and carry laws either deter or reduce crime. And this again goes back to this this focus on crime. If you look at really why people are dying from gun death and injury in our country, criminal assault is really the third cause. The first cause is suicide, and the second cause is homicide between people who know each other. So what we know is
none of these show up in the crime stats. That's the point that you're
exactly.
making.
Exactly. And easy access to guns when people are despairing, despondent, angry, intoxicated, that's really the cause of gun death and injury in our country, not this sort of mythological criminal out there. The criminal use of guns is much lower.
John Myers from Philadelphia, does this fit with what you are seeing in your own city?
Well, part of it is, and actually most of it is not. Here in Philadelphia, as a result of the prohibition on local municipalities being able to regulate guns, we now have 28,000 per concealed permit to carry, when in the city of New York, the fire barrels only have 16,000. And as a result of that, there's been more deaths in the city of Philadelphia. And there are at least 100 cases where people who had permits to carry concealed weapons, their weapons have been stolen and used in homicides.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. So, John, are you making the case to Scott here that conceal and carry in Pennsylvania may, in fact, be leading to a higher rate of gun use in people shooting people, not necessarily in the commission of a crime, but just in gun deaths?
Well, I'm saying here in Philadelphia, because, I'm very cognitive of the fact that that every county in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania does not have the same unique circumstances. As I'm sure that the other state rep finds in his district,
right.
That his circumstances are much different than those in mine.
So, John, if you make it difficult for someone to get their hands on a gun in Philadelphia, aren't they just going to drive out to Marlboro or Hillstown and buy a gun out there and then come back to the city?
Well, I believe that the potential to do that. However, in order to buy a weapon, I mean, you know, you have to pass a state police a check. And you have to show, in fact, where you live. And, of course, we all know that you have to sign a document saying that it's not a straw purchase, that this gun is going to be used solely by you. And if you violate that, then you violate the federal law. So all I'm saying is that it's two things. One, that there are some laws that exist on the book that we need to strenuously more enact and enforce. And secondly, that we have to find a way to limit the availability of guns, because I agree with the last caller that if you don't have a gun, then you can't kill somebody with a bullet.
One last quick question, John, and I know you have to go, so this one's for you. Do you think that that's the direction this country is heading, a limiting on guns, or do you think that, in fact, the country's going in the other direction with more and more of the kind of conceal and carry weapons that we're also talking about?
Well, I kind of agree with Rebecca in that regard. I mean, I think we kind of split down the middle in that regard. There is definitely a real struggle across this country, and each camp is trying to promote their ideological and philosophical view about what is the right way to go, what's the wrong way to go. The camp that I belong to says that we need to reduce the availability of guns. Let me say this one thing here.
John, I can't. I'm afraid I am out of time. I want to thank you for being with us on the program. John Myers, Pennsylvania State Representative. They're on the phone from Philadelphia. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And John couldn't have set it up for us better with his last comment. We have these two very distinct points of view in the country. One saying that, in fact, limiting access to guns is the way to prevent the kind of gun violence we saw this week in Red Lake, Minnesota, and other people saying, you know, if more people had weapons, fewer of those incidents would happen. What do you think? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. The horrible killing of the school children in Red Lake, Minnesota is once again getting people talking about what can be done in this country to try and prevent that kind of incident. It always brings up the question of gun control, whether or not that is effective. There are many other aspects to this conversation, but we're going to try and focus on what can be done with laws, what can be done in terms of changing attitudes, and we'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255 to Charleston, South Carolina, for our next call. And Michelle's on the program. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I've been listening to this conversation with a growing sense of sadness, and I'm in a way disappointed in The Connection, because I wish you had had a better focus. I have in my family five people who have committed suicide. Handguns were used in four of those. And there's no conversation about what happens when people, particularly males and particularly young males, are overwhelmed with feelings of despair, depression, sadness, grief, and then meet up with the way our society treats people in those conditions, which is with extraordinary disdain, contempt, a feeling that these people must be losers, wimps. Particularly for men, to ask for help is absolutely unacceptable.
Michelle, I want to try and keep this on the focus of guns for the purposes of this conversation. And so what I wanted to know from you is, do you think that if it had been harder for those four members of your family, and I'm sorry for that the story you told me, but had it been more difficult for those people to get guns, do you think they would have had looked for another way out, another and perhaps more constructive?
We're past that. Guns are so present in this society that nothing we do now will end this ability to put your hand on one. We're past that conversation. That's over.
So is it a waste of time for legislators to look at different ways of banning assault weapons or rifles or handguns or making it easier to get access to it?
It's a convenient out. Because it prevents us from having a conversation about what we can do for people who are in grief and pain. You know, this is not a conversation separate from a conversation about funding for mental health care, Medicaid. I would love to know what the Wisconsin legislature is doing in terms of psychological and mental health services. All across this country, every state is looking at slashing funds for their departments of mental health. Private companies are slashing their reimbursements for care for emotionally and mentally ill people.
Michelle, I think you make a really good point on that. I do. And you certainly have a position from which you can make that point with real force. I want to go to Rebecca, though, just for a reaction to the point that Michelle made, saying, you know, we're past the point of trying to control the number of guns in society. That all those, you know, horses are out of the barn now.
Well, I think that's what the gun industry would like us all to think, and then so the only solution left is to buy more guns. I tend to go back and think of it more in some of the other strategies that we've used when it comes to approaching problems from a public health perspective, like tobacco or seatbelt use. Well, I mean, at one point, 50 years ago, we thought that tobacco was not at best good, at best harmless or even good for you. But it took a lot of research, and we realized, and we changed people's attitudes, and we changed their behaviors over time. So now we know that smoking is bad for you, and it's not just the cigarettes.
This one's tougher, though, Rebecca. This is much more polarized. There wasn't a really big lobby saying, yes, everybody, you got to smoke. You got to stand up for your constitutional right to smoke.
Well, it's true that the tobacco industry did not wrap itself in the Constitution, and that certainly has given the gun industry a huge advantage. Actually, if you go to the Second Amendment, they use that a lot to argue against any reasonable regulation. But in fact, the Supreme Court has taken up cases. In 1939 was a landmark case where they specifically said that it was not unconstitutional for reasonable restrictions. And that was upheld again in 1980. So we know already from the Supreme Court that reasonable regulation is not unconstitutional. Right. Our debate really should be on what is reasonable.
To Columbia, South Carolina, and Ron is joining us. Ron, you're bringing a slightly different perspective here.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Before I came here 8 years ago, I lived 26 years in South America and 17 in Europe. And basically, you will see killings and crime by criminals, but it's hard to find this kind of rampage where somebody gets a weapon and just shoots 10, 20 people. And that's why I think that not having the guns everywhere and just at arm's length would help to reduce that.
I'm going to ask you to make that case to Scott Gunderson, who's one of the people arguing the other side here. Ron, are you saying that in your judgment it is difficult enough to get a gun in Europe or in South America to the point where people don't have the access and therefore don't commit the kinds of crimes and murders that we're talking about?
That is correct. And if I heard him before saying that the Second Amendment, and I have a lot of respect for the Constitution, the right to bear arms to defend yourselves, I would make the suggestion to check when that was done. And if that was done in the 1700s, 1800s, obviously the society was a little different from now. You had to have an arm if you were somewhere out in the West. There were animals, there were, I don't know, bandits, whatever. I think we have evolved a little since then.
Go ahead, Scott. So,
well, access to guns, I mean, if that's going to be the argument, that the problem is only access to guns, I think everybody better to just sit back and take a good look at where we're going. We've got a problem here with a societal problem. I mean, we've got a problem where we are really in letting kids watch some of the crazy stuff on television today, these crazy videos that really endorse violence. And, you know, I think the last caller, you know, had some good points when it comes to some of the issues dealing with mental health. I think mental health is a big issue. I think a lot of the states are looking at it, even though she said a lot of states are cutting back, and they are because of budget constraints. I know in Wisconsin we have a bill that's been in front of us looking at mental health issues. So, I mean, you know, it's not just about access. Somebody has to take that firearm and use it, and it's
That's the interesting part of the question and the part of your position. I want you to just take one step further for me, because if you would restrict children's access to violent video games, and if you would have some question about the kind of provocative music and websites and that people can get access to, you wouldn't take that to the step of saying, you know what, and the kids should not have access to guns in the home as well.
Well, you know what? That's up to the family and up to the parents, and it's about education at home. It's the same thing when it comes to allowing your kids to watch these violent videos. It's the same thing when it comes to educating your kids about the firearms that you may have in your home. And, you know, there is no reason why. We have plenty of young boys and girls across this country who go hunting at young ages. Our state is 12 and up. There are states that are allowing younger than that.
Yeah, 9, 10-year-olds. I know that.
And the safest group of hunters, the safest group of hunters in this country is 16 and under with an adult, when they are accompanied by an adult. So it comes down to education. And you know what? The other thing is that I will tell you that most of those crimes that Representative Myers was talking about in Philadelphia, I would venture to guess that the majority, and I mean a high majority of those crimes, if not all of them, that those guns were bought illegally or they were bought with straw purchasers. That's an illegal activity, and those are the type of activities that we have to be doing a better job with. I will tell you, in Wisconsin, I had a bill to make straw purchases a felony. And I could not get that passed. The governor would not support that bill in Wisconsin, and that's silly. And so here I am, the guy in Wisconsin who is pushing for a concealed carry law and at the same time want to make straw purchasing a felony mm-hmm. instead of a misdemeanor, and I couldn't get that passed.
All right, Scott,
that doesn't make sense.
Back to our callers here. We're going next to Raleigh, North Carolina. Tim's on the line from there. Hey, Tim, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, I wanted to speak on the concealed carry. I had a situation with a family member who was involved in a shooting, and someone with a concealed weapon actually saved her life. A jealous boyfriend burst into a little jam session she was a part of and with a rifle and actually shot one guy and was going to shoot her also. And someone there who happened to have a concealed weapon was able to actually shoot the guy, the shooter, and actually saved her life. So I'm a firm believer that concealed carry can save lives.
And does that then extend to making it available for people to have those weapons anywhere, Tim? Is that your conclusion based on that?
I feel that if you're a law-abiding citizen, you should be able to carry anywhere that is legal. And one of the misconceptions, like earlier, I think it may have been you, said something about, you know, should people be allowed to carry guns in bars? And that's illegal. You're not allowed to carry a gun in concealed in any location right. that serves alcohol.
No, but I can tell you that there is a bill now pending before the Tennessee legislature that, in fact, would free up the people to have a weapon in a bar or in a school or in a daycare center. I mean, there are these questions, I guess, Tim, more to the point, are being debated in different states right around the country. So it varies from state to state. I want to hear Rebecca's response to the story that Tim's just told. What do you think, Rebecca?
Oh, well, we can go story to story, head to head on the stories.
But they count for something, don't they?
Well, you know, I think what counts the most is to look at data and research and try to figure out what do we really can know from some scientific review. There isn't a lot of it. We need a lot more of it. But there is no data that shows that concealed carry laws make any of us the least bit safer.
What's the number of states, though? I think that, help me with this, Scott, there's 46 states now that have a concealed carry law?
Well, 46 have some type of concealed carry law. 34 have shall issue, which means if you meet the criteria, they have to give it to you. And then 12 others have a law that, under certain circumstances, a judge or a sheriff or somebody could maybe give a permit to that person.
And does that indicate a trend in that direction, more and more conceal and carry?
Well, in the last 2 years, or five states have enacted concealed carry laws or changed their laws. I think, like I said earlier, we have never seen a state try to repeal a concealed carry law. And the reason is because they work. You know, most people, when they hear about a concealed carry law, especially in a state that doesn't have one like Wisconsin, you know, they talk about the wild, wild west shootings in the street and all mm-hmm. that crazy notions. You know, they don't even realize that the majority of the states that they go to, the visit, to vacation, to whatever, are a concealed carry state. And they don't notice it. They don't see it. And there are no problems in these states. So, you know, we could argue till the cows come home, but I'm going to tell you that this is about the difference is law-abiding citizens who are carrying concealed weapons mm-hmm. and doing the right thing with training. And then we're talking about crimes that are committed by people who either are buying guns illegally or these terrible crimes that happen by troubled and disturbed people. And we're not talking apples and oranges here.
Let me just step in here to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Connection. My name's Dick Gordon. Rebecca, I want to hear from you on this.
Because I want to jump in and say, you know, I'm fascinated because the concealed carry laws, they're very different from state to state. The Minnesota law that was passed in 2003 was overturned and is under review in the court system right now. But what's fascinating to me is that the very legislators who pass these laws will often exempt their own workplaces. So you can carry your guns just about anywhere, but not on federal government property, not in the courthouses, not in the state houses.
Not in malls in some
if
cases.
Malls are fine. I mean, if these are really safe, if these really do make us safer, why can't we carry concealed weapons into the federal buildings when I go to see my congressman? Why do I have to give notice before I can enter the state house in the state of Minnesota? Why do some state houses prohibit it entirely?
Well, I don't think Scott would disagree with you.
I think this is hypocrisy.
Rebecca's right, and there are people that are very hypocritical. I said very clearly in a press conference and when we were talking about this bill that I would have no problem with people carrying concealed weapons in our state capitol. You know, these are our best people. Again, go through training and they go through a background check. I'm not concerned about those people. You know, the people we should be concerned about is those people who don't have a permit today. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? If we pass this law, they're not going to have a permit tomorrow. And that's what's going on in these other states.
Let me, if I can, interrupt you here, Scott, and go back to our callers. Quickly to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. John is with us. Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me. I'd just like to say that I don't think that gun control laws would have made a bit of difference in this case in Red Lake.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because this kid killed his grandfather, which is just it's unconscionable in a Native American community to take the life of an elder, especially your own grandfather. He must have been in severely bad shape emotionally to have even considered it, but, I mean, that's where he got most of his weapons, so it was clearly part of his plan.
And his grandfather was also a tribal police officer,
that's
so
right.
He had, you know, every right to have those weapons. So what's the takeaway from this, John, that gun control has nothing to do with this type of incident or nothing to do with the prevalence of this kind of killing that we've seen in the past month?
I think it's mostly relevant to this type of incident. I mean, of course, it brings up the conversation of how do we prevent this kind of crime? But in this particular case, I think that you're looking at a kid that was so emotionally disturbed that he was willing to break some really severe community taboos in order to carry out what he wanted to do. And it kind of gets back to some of the mental health discussions that y'all were having earlier. But, you know, when someone is bound and determined to wreak havoc, they're going to find a way to get a weapon. And in this case, he got one weapon which allowed him to get others.
And, Rebecca, that takes us back to where you began about changing attitudes.
Yeah, you know, I have a vision for how this country should be viewing firearms. I would like to see us see firearms as tools that are used by basically sportsmen and hunters, that their shotguns and rifles, that they're stored away when they're not in use, that ammunition is locked separately, and that people wouldn't think of keeping a handgun in their home, that handguns would be for the very small number of people that maybe do some competitive shooting. But by and large, we would not have weapons out there as means for self-protection. That would greatly cut down on the number of guns out there and the access, and we'd have more of a healthy approach to firearms, which is, sure, it's part of a sporting culture, a hunting culture,
right,
but it really has no place in a civilized society.
All right, Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us on the program today.
Thanks.
Rebecca Thoman is Executive Director of Citizens for a Safer Minnesota, and State Representative Scott Gunderson, thanks for your time.
Well, thank you very much, Dick.
Scott joining us there in a studio from Wisconsin. Earlier we talked with Ruben Rosario, reporter and columnist of the Pioneer Press, based out of St. Paul, Minnesota, and State Representative John Myers from Philadelphia. Our program is produced by Nancy Cohen, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenelosa, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.